In government, open innovation, in my definition, is the ability to tap the collective knowledge of employees and or constituents to drive agency innovation. So it's really allowing you to open up the process and allow other people to participate.
And by doing that, I mean, we've seen this with, are we talking about things like challenges, those kinds of things?
Sure. So open innovation can be a contest. So maybe it's, you know, how can we reduce our use of paper? But it can also be, you know, what can we do better as an agency to serve you? And you may have noticed platforms like My Starbucks Idea and some of these other sites that collect ideas from customers and constituents that have been used to build new products in the private sector. But that same technology can be leveraged in the public sector to really drive agency innovation and help identify and solve internal and external problems within government agencies.
And part of this freaks people out, frankly, because we've all been trained that that information is power, and if it's powerful, then we want to keep it close to our chest. The more of it we have, we don't want to share it. But part of this is this idea that that all of us are smarter than each of us individually, that if we share it, really marvelous things happen.
Exactly. You know, everyone is an expert in something, to quote Beth Novak. And it's something that, you know, in Manor, where I was formerly assistant city manager, really was something amazing that happened with the platform that we had there. And like you said, people are afraid of relinquishing power. In a real open innovation platform, you still maintain the decision-making structure of an agency, but it's just a better way to identify and solve challenges and have a dedicated channel that's established. I mean, you look at, you know, my frustration in government is you have so many channels of communication, and you look at how an idea becomes a solution currently, and it really varies based on the agency and the department. I mean, it can be written on a post-it note, it can be in an email, and there's not a clear-cut channel for a constituent to say, I think you could do this better, or here's my idea on what you could do to save money. There's not these set channels to do that. And the other problem is...
So often that runs up against the, that's not the way we do business here kind of thing.
That's right, yeah. That's right. And part of that, and you know, part of the reason why I started this blog series is people need to understand that there is a business value to having open innovation and to tapping the collective knowledge of constituents and employees. They really can see things that we can't see. I mean, there's a reason why companies are doing this, and there's a reason why agencies that have done this have really been able to solve challenges much quicker.
And so what we're seeing more and more, seeing increasingly, are this is a way for to actually tap your citizenship. This is a way to tap your interested parties. It's a great way to involve people in the actual process of governance management.
That's correct. And I mean, it's much more than just, you know, it's very easy to collect a bunch of popular ideas.
Yeah.
But really, an open innovation platform should be a process, like you said, that people are involved in from the beginning to the end. So if someone has an idea, it shouldn't just, you know, be voted on by other people. They should actually be involved in helping cultivate, weed, and grow this idea into a solution.
And so you did this a little bit at Manor with a whole platform to actually where people could submit ideas. Talk a little bit about how you actually go about doing this.
That's a great question. So, I mean, really the first thing you want to do is educate. People need to understand what it is you're looking for, and you need to have a mission that you're looking to accomplish. So putting up a portal and saying, you know, we're going to allow citizens to suggest things to make us better isn't necessarily the best course of action.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've always said if you give a citizen a megaphone and you don't tell them what to do with it, more than likely they're going to shout at you.
Yeah.
But if you give them a megaphone and you give them some direction and some instruction with what you are expecting from them, then you're more likely to actually solve challenges. So,
I was watching Diane Sawyer was on the new Oprah network the other day, and they have this program called Masterclass, and she said her quote was, a complaint is really just a kind of unpleasant way of making a request, and if we give them a way to actually make the request in a open, transparent way, they can see what the process is, all of a sudden you may not get the complaint as much.
Exactly. And, you know, let's say someone has an idea and, you know, that's already something that's in development. Well, it's good for the agency to respond and say, hey, you know, this is a great idea. We're currently working on that. Why don't you join and, you know, tell us what you think about it? It also provides a way to you respond to it one time and the 15 other people that have thought of that same idea and that are really upset that the agency is not going forward can see, oh, you know, the agency is working on it. really about bridging this gap between government and citizens, and not just, you know, putting out as minimal information as possible, but actually allowing citizens to be a part of the process and to ask questions and to get answers. And, you know, that process itself is very powerful.
And I know, and it sounds like we sort of talk about some of these Gov 2.0 things and openness and transparency as if they're separate from each other. If they really work well, they're almost hand in glove. They work almost as part of one helps the other, and it becomes part of this cohesive way of reaching out to people.
Exactly. I mean, transparency is a huge part of open innovation, and one of the beautiful things about Spigot is that, you know, the transparent platform is what makes people come back. I mean, you think about a typical suggestion box, and, you know, we've used these in government before. Someone drops an idea off, and they don't know what happens to it after that. You know, they don't know if it was implemented unless they see it, you know, around on the street somewhere. But there's really no feedback loop with ideas from citizens or even employees, and there's no channel for that. But when you channel that and you give them that transparent feedback loop, even if you can't implement an idea, even if it's not something that's within, you know, an agency's jurisdiction, giving them and closing that feedback is very powerful because you're building relationships. And Gov 2.0 is about the people, and it's about building relationships, and it's about leveraging technology to do so.
Maynor, you did it on a fairly small scale. Maynor is not a ginormous place, is it?
That's it. It's not a ginormous place. That's right.
Is this concept scalable?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're working with very, very large cities to scale this technology up and to show that when done right and when applying strategy to it and actually having, you know, a mission to accomplish with it, you can really generate powerful results.
So what's the biggest pushbacks to why don't folks do this? It sounds great. Sounds like, oh, sure, do that. I know one of the real challenges is this if you build it, they will come kind of concept, which doesn't really work all that way. You can't just build it and say, oh, sure, look, we're open. We're doing open innovation. And then it requires some, this is a garden. You have to actually care for that garden.
Exactly. I mean, it's about education. And, you know, that's one of the stumbling blocks and the roadblocks now, because there's a lot of really cool technologies, a lot of really flashy technologies, but people need to understand the business value associated with the technologies within this Gov 2.0 movement. And they need to know that from the beginning. And so, you know, when someone's interested in this technology, they need to see that, okay, I can apply this to solve, you know, X, Y, and Z problems. And that's the powerful thing, educating people on what it is, what's out there, what it can accomplish, and then sharing best practices within the government community about, you know, how this is helping. I mean, that's part of the reason why I started this blog series, is I want people to understand open innovation and what it is, and you know, talk about kind of the nitty-gritty details about this is how it works, here are some lessons learned from some of the platforms that I've deployed, and this is how you can configure one and start thinking about one for your agency. So education's first, but some of the other stumbling blocks, you know, of course, are culture. So government has a culture that is not always conducive to allow citizen input in the process. And so part of that is by just gradually introducing these concepts within an agency. And so I always tell agencies to start internal first. You know,
right.
Tap your employees. Your employees all have very, very good knowledge in their subject matters, and tap them and allow them to give feedback. And then from that, start to create and cultivate a culture of innovation with your organization. And when you do that, you're primed to go external and then start to allow citizens to provide input and processes and things. And you can really take an agency that has a very structured, you know, process and take that and allow people to provide some input on that and make that process stronger. It's not about replacing hierarchy or decision-making trees. It's about building onto that and leveraging that and adding value to that using citizens or employees.
And part of it is you don't have to carry all the weight of the decision-making process on your own shoulders. Share the wealth, for goodness sake.
That's
people
right.
want to help.
That's right. And that's the principles of, like, you know, Open 311 and some of these other technologies like C-Click-Fix. It's distributing the collective power of people, so distributing the work that's required to make an idea come into a solution. I mean, you look at, let's say someone submits an idea now. Well, yeah, ultimately, if a superior likes it, that boss is going to assign it out to an employee to go and research. And the burden of the entire process is on the employee themselves. And that's a problem. You know, that burden should be distributed out, and it should allow other people to participate. So maybe someone has an idea or a policy idea about, you know, let's say banning texting while driving. Other people should be able to weigh in and say, you know, hey, here's some statistics about why I think it's important. here's a copy of someone's ordinance. I mean, you build this whole, you know, solution out of what was first a concept, and you're distributing the workload from being put solely on one person or one department to a community.
Are there some areas where open innovation can work well and then some areas where it's just not going to work very well?
Well, I think open innovation is challenging when it comes to defense. Now, it can be done internally within a closed community, and it really adds a lot of value to it. But I think that the whole principles and structures of open innovation and distributing this process of ideation can really be applied to almost every aspect of government in some form or fashion, from policy to participatory budgeting, to, you know, crowdsourcing the development of, you know, a defense-related item. There's so many different applications of the technology. It's just the configuration of it that may change from, you know, place to place.
So you posted the first of the 10-part series on GovLoop, and we'll have a link to that so people can find it nice and easy. Give folks an idea what's yet to come in the other 9 posts here.
So week 2 hit yesterday, and week 2 is talking about how open innovation can actually be used to solve challenges and solve problems. So the first week was identifying the problems. Now let's actually build solutions out of that and solve them. And so to come, you're going to see things about how behavioral science and persuasive technology elements can be embedded in the process. And essentially what that means is, how do you motivate people to participate in a process? What would make someone want to go and spend their free time helping an agency become more efficient? And those are very important questions that need to be asked. There's a lot of things that are biting for our attention. You have Farmville and you have these other games. So how do you make the process less daunting and make it more fun and use principles of game mechanics to do so?